everybody, and welcome to Game Studies Review. My name is Alex Lane. I'm here with Cody Reimer. How you doing, buddy?
I am well. I love the kind of melodic intro. I'm well. I'm excited to have the summer ahead of me and dive into some of the work that got slated for the summer, which is very germane to the article that we are reviewing, because one of the big tasks for me this summer is to help lead design an entire curriculum, an entire program around game and media studies. And it couldn't be more timely because...
Do you feel better about that task after reading this article or much, much worse?
You know, it's really interesting. So I've got mixed feelings, I'll say, but I'm cautiously optimistic, is I guess how I'll put it. We are reviewing the brand new piece from Games and Culture from Brendan Keough and Taylor Hardwick, 2023, Games and Culture, titled Creative, Technical, Entrepreneurial, Formative Tensions in Game Development, Higher Education. And so these are Australian scholars who are doing a study of Australian higher ed programs and institutions and degrees that teach video game development. And they argue that game development in higher education, quote, reveals epistemological and pedagogical tensions between technical and creative skill sets, game-centric and games-diffuse graduate pathways, and individualistic and collaborative working identities, end quote. So they are looking at these formative tensions, as the subtitle tells us, in how higher ed teaches or proposes to teach, situates, contextualizes, promises,
markets
video games in their kind of programming. And so I was really interested to see this kind of drop or get published, came across my timeline, saw it in a couple of the spaces that I pay attention to, and so I had to pin it. And given what I'm, you know, going to be thinking about a lot this summer, I wanted to read it. And I'm very curious to hear your reactions, Alex, because you also are in a similar space.
Indeed. Like in the last couple of years, I've created four micro certificates and a minor in game design and game studies. And so this was right where my head's been at for the last few years. And so reading this, it feels like maybe this has happened to you in life, maybe it hasn't, but you're hanging out, maybe you're with your spouse or a friend, and they say something so insightful about yourself that you never even realize. You're like, oh my God. And it sort of takes your breath away. You're like, that cuts to the core. And you just have to take a moment of silence, because you're like, I mean, maybe those thoughts were kind of bouncing around in your head, but like not in your consciousness, you know? So that is my reaction to this article. It was like,
cut you to the quick. Yeah.
Ooh. Okay. I got to take a breath here. And I'll say I don't even know if I'd go as far to say they're critiquing the way higher ed is doing video game education as much as uncovering and revealing what's happening. I don't think I don't get the sense that their aim in here is to shame or call to out or, you know, whatever, but more like this is happening and we need to be aware of it and cognizant of it. And as we build programs, answer about it.
I agree. And I don't want to like get too much into it before we kind of properly introduce what they're doing and give the kind of high level overview, but they were wonderfully, tactful and matter of fact in their delivery. There was not as much kind of judgment or evaluation as much as saying this is happening because these things are happening, and
sometimes it's not fun to have that mirror up in front of your face, Cody. Sometimes it's not fun.
No, but I mean, these are also conversations that I've been tracking, in discourse from various places all over. And even I remember seeing T.L. Taylor talking about this very issue I don't remember where it was. It was probably Twitter, if I'm being honest. She was commenting on it. And like, yeah, this is, I see this happening a lot. And there need to be serious conversations about it. And so,
well, when we're not recording, we've had some very honest, serious conversations about this as well. So we've been doing this. So let's introduce the article.
I've got this kind of lengthy quote that I think I'm just going to read it to you. It's, the whole thing is very well written. I've just pulled a ton of quotes from it because I'm like, yep, this is great. Yep, this says it very well. Yep, this is good. And I found myself just kind of nodding along the whole time. And so I didn't do some of the synthesis and kind of paraphrasing or summary work. I just grabbed whole cloth these quotes. Mm-hmm. So they write, quote, "To develop video games requires critical and cultural skills such as storytelling, aesthetic analysis, social analysis, visual design, and rhetoric, all traditionally the territory of humanities, arts, and social sciences, HASS disciplines. But developing video games requires technical skills such as computer programming, software development, trigonometry, network coding, hardware management, and user interface design, all traditionally the territory of STEM disciplines. Video game development could be, and indeed is, taught within either HASS or STEM." I'm just going to say has or HOS or
HOS.
STEM. HOS or STEM departments, which drastically different emphases on different skills, different potential job outcomes, and different graduate identities and pathways. How do these different institutional contexts influence the structure and culture of game development higher education programs? What skills are taught? What learning outcomes are prioritized? And what jobs are promised?" End quote. And I think that does a fantastic mm-hmm. job of setting up the central tension that they are trying to explore in this study and, you know, delivering the sort of research questions that emerge from the identification, I think very adept identification of that central tension in that video games are highly interdisciplinary, but the entropy and inertia and hyper conservatism of the ivory tower means that silos happen and therefore programs get anchored to or nested within a particular disciplinary silo. And so even interdisciplinary programs end up, you know, working very differently wherever they're sort of housed or the sorts of faculty that teach them. And so trying to figure out, like, what does this mean and look like in higher ed? Because as they go on to explore, there are a ton of really fraught issues in teaching video game development in higher education. And so they go on to map 119 programs in Australian higher ed, and they end up arguing that there's some really, you know, kind of epistemological and pedagogical tensions between the technical and the creative. So there's a lot to say. I'm curious to, you know, I can jump into the contributions, but I've been talking for a little bit. I want to, before we kind of get into the contributions, what's your hot take and initial first read, Alex?
Well, so I'm curious about whether you think this is accurate or not. So as you point out, one of the big tensions that they're exploring is this, the disciplinary silos that exist in higher ed. And when you have something like game design, game development, that is deeply artistic and mathematical or programming and, you know, whatever. So you have this fused area. I don't get the sense that they're saying we can't do it in higher ed. We shouldn't do it in higher ed. But when we have these programs that are in a silo, we should be concerned that we're not teaching everything that these students need. What do you think? Correct?
I don't know that I would go so far as to say, yes, in a sense. But I think it's a little bit more nuanced than just, I don't think they're teaching everything that students need. I think it's largely an observation of what is being promised versus what is being delivered. Yep. And not necessarily just delivered, because it's not getting into, like, you know, actual, like, placement rates and industry placement rates or anything like that. But it's more like, what is going on in higher ed's, you know, game development stuff? And just, let's see what's going on.
I get the sense that the HOS programs are focused on a bit more as well. At least the examples that are given throughout the piece seem to be from more of the creative side.
Yeah, I would have to like go back and do a little bit closer look. I didn't pick up on that, but you know, maybe it's not surprising. So ultimately, their kind of big contributions are as follows. They say that the data set echoed quote, entrenched technical and linear assumptions of video game development processes by not simply promising to teach video game development skills, but to reveal what the skills of video game development mm-hmm. even are in the first place, as if all that is stopping a student who loves playing games from making their own hit is learning the syntax and operation of a few software programs, end quote. So indeed. This big first, you know, or one of the big tensions is in how these programs recruit potential students. Or these, you know, programs or majors or whatever, by saying like, you don't have to be somebody who wants to make video games. You just have to be somebody who loves playing video games.
Yes.
And you know, don't you want to do that for a living? Never minding the fact or blatantly ignoring the fact, that they are wildly, wholly different enterprises and people often who love playing video games, who, you know, that is one of their primary hobbies, absolutely abhor the process and work of making a video game. And that disparity, that disconnect is at real issue in what I think of as the integrity and ethics of delivering the kind of promise of higher education in many ways. Especially when it's treated as a pathway to kind of career trajectories or a career pathway, which is another critique that they level, is that it's often treated as like, you know, outside of the purview of higher ed's need to enrich whole people and instill in them kind of not just careerism and marketable skills, but also a sense of, you know, roundedness, the kind of liberal arts approach to education, civic, you know, knowledge and understanding, as well as personal growth and development. And so that was another critique when they say that, you know, quote, programs are consistent in their focus on developing job-ready skills, fostering industry connections, and the nebulous importance of an entrepreneurial mindset that will allow students to turn unpredictable futures into self-chosen adventures, end quote, which was a really, really strong, I think, observation. And it's one that I've even heard echoed in the early stages of the work that I'm doing, we can't promise them futures and jobs, so we'll just teach them how to be entrepreneurs. And that'll, you know, just, mm-hmm. you know, kind of neatly sidestep all of our responsibility and abdicate, you know, the need to promise actual jobs. And we just say, hey, you like games? Everybody likes games. Games are really popular. Come join our program. Give us your money. And then you can go into work business for yourself. You know,
I'm surprised you don't have the quote in here that goes along with this, which is these programs, they keep setting up, you know, you love playing games. This is the next step. This is the next step for you. Right. And the authors wonder in the piece at whether this is a grab for students in a time when enrollment is taking a lot of programs, particularly in the humanities.
Yeah. And so you had said like, or I had noted for most of this, it's extremely sort of matter of fact, and mm-hmm. there's not necessarily a lot of judgment statements. But there is a point where they just like say, at least within Australian contexts, because that is the scope of their focus. These are all mm-hmm. Australian higher ed programs. They're like, you know, Conservative Party is defunding higher education, and there's all of these problems that are putting, and I don't think it's their language, but basically like applying downward pressure. And so we're scrambling to find students. And so, you know, higher ed institutions are
people like games. Get them in.
Saying like, people like games, we need butts and seats, we need, you know, to boost our kind of you know, enrollment caps or targets or whatever. So how do we market this, and what do we build and what do we market to get people to come? Video games, period.
And this question really does resonate out throughout higher ed, because what is our role here? Like, are we educating citizens, right? That's how it has been traditionally. Are we preparing people for jobs? Are we, I've created the my game program, you're working on yours. Are we doing this because, well, we, you know, the things we were trained in aren't getting students in the door anymore. So the tensions are very real.
They are. And this was especially sharp to me because I'm at a polytechnic institute. Mm-hmm. And so University of Wisconsin Stout is like the UW system's polytechnic. And so it is extremely career focused. You know, one of the mottos we have is like hands on, minds on. There, you know, there is an expectation of a thorough sort of blend of both theoretical and praxis oriented approach in pedagogy and curriculum design.
Your job numbers are on your website.
The job numbers are on the website. We're expected or we're required to have advisory boards for each program that have industry stakeholders present. And it is very much a sort of capitalist mechanism of industry. But at the same time, the Polytechnic mission is not only like tech college, it is that blend of like technical skills with a sort of general education, liberal arts foundation, so that, you know, the understanding that we are oftentimes preparing people for jobs that don't yet exist.
You can deeply, learn deeply, and learn widely.
Right. But a lot of their critiques of or kind of observations of the mechanisms and levers of capitalism and the pressures that the kind of, you know, where Australia is in higher education resonated with me. And I certainly felt some of those tensions, because in the early stages in what we are doing, it has been like the first thing I say in any conversation, you know, that it's brought up, like, I am not willing to put my name and my work into a program that is just going to be an unethical cash grab that, you know, promises industry connections or jobs or, you know, any of that just at all. One, because the industry doesn't care. Like,
they really don't.
Stout also has an actual game design and development program set and apart from the program that we're, you know, that I'm working on. And so I'm in conversation. I love those folks. The faculty over there are great. They've been dealing with the same issues. And so I'm trying to work, you know, hand in glove with them to try to like thread this needle or, you know, walk this tightrope. I do think that, you know, we've got something to offer, but trying to make sure that it gets positioned the right way, that it gets identified and discussed and built what I think of as the right way, an ethical way, to kind of safeguard against some of the kind of marketing copy that Hardwick and Keogh talk about is paramount for me. And I know it is for our GDD program as well, because they are interdisciplinary too. They are, they've got computer science and art students. And it is like, you know, you're probably going to become an artist or animator, or you're going to do programming, but you're probably not going to be ending up in industry. This is just an interdisciplinary way to think through and learn through some of these highly, you know, cross-disciplinary functions. And some of you who are interested in industry, this is going to give you a lot of good hands-on experience to help build your portfolio. Because one of the kind of key takeaways in the industry, at least in my understanding, is that industry cares about portfolio and strength of work and not about a diploma or a program
list
or
any classes. Sort of
higher list of classes. So like, show us what you got. And if you can get to that through higher ed, then more power to you. But they don't care that you came necessarily from some particular program.
Yeah. When was the last time you went out and you bought a nice fiction book and you're like, okay, maybe this author, let me see where they got their creative writing degree. I want to know that first before I read it.
Well, and that was one of the things exactly that, you know, the authors talked about was like, it's not just the skills, it's also the networking. We'll give you the network connections, which is that and the entrepreneurial spirit. Like, you know, we're the three legs of the tripod of how we market games and higher ed is we'll give you the skills, we'll give you the connections, and we'll teach you the grit, the entrepreneurial know-how to, you know, make this happen. And all of those sort of neatly absolve, you know, higher ed programs from having to recognize that the industry does not care about them.
Yes.
Right. Like, I love the data that they gave. There's 17 Australian video game developers for each program. They looked at 119 programs. And in Australia, there's only 17 like Australian video game developers from IGEA data per program. Each program is what? Putting out at least that, maybe more each year.
Yeah.
And there's 119 of them. Like the, and understandably, like those people don't have to stay in Australia, blah, 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 blah. But there's a disconnect that has to be reconciled with. And that is, that's been on my heart and mind this whole time as I've been thinking about, like, what do I, how do I try to, you know, build something that offers students what I think is valuable.
And if you're selling the, hey, you love games, come here, we'll teach you all this great stuff about games, this is the next step for you. But then the jobs are actually, none of them are in games. You're actually going to work in, you know, in an adjacent or totally different industry or something like that. That's where the I think the big ethical issue lies in here, among others. So there's a couple of gaps. Nothing too serious. Looks like you have a couple noted down here too. The data was limited. They're not digging down so deeply to, like, you know, the actual course titles or who's teaching, you know, faculty from, maybe it's a very interdisciplinary program that have faculty teaching the courses from all over, but you don't get to see that. But I don't think any of these gaps really undercut the central argument or the point of this. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And they were really, you know, kind of clear in identifying what the limitations were. The data does not include actual like courses or program plans, which is would provide a lot of texture and granularity with which to kind of better understand. That might be a follow-up study to think about, but that is, that gets real, you know, that gets pretty messy. The data doesn't include actual career pathways, but only promised ones, which is something that they identify. And then they also give a list of limitations. Quote, it is important to emphasize the limitations of the study in terms of its focus on a single geographic region, Australia, the volatility of time in which the data was collected, 2020 to 2021, and especially in terms of our dependence on publicly available material, end quote. And that last bit is, if people aren't in higher ed or haven't done research of higher ed programs, this is a really subtle one to overlook that has big consequences, because if you've never researched higher education, the publicly available material is often abysmal. And here is why. Usually you have to go to websites and education's, you know, the higher ed institutions' websites. And despite often spending egregious amounts of money on consultancy for, like, you know, web dev and stuff, most institutions have terrible,
worst
websites ever. And this is, you know, a really complex issue. But what it boils down to for research is that you often get outdated information on websites because there is, you know, content strategy for sprawling, huge, multidisciplinary, siloed, conservative, old institutes is incredibly difficult, and getting departments to update and keep contemporary and make available all of their current offerings or the, you know, most up-to-date.
I was listed as an interdisciplinary studies professor for 3 years on our website because I taught one summer course for interdisciplinary studies, which doesn't even have professors, for 3 years.
Yeah,
that's how bad our website is.
You know, the websites are often woefully outdated, sometimes just flat out wrong. There's a lot of issues. And so getting like accurate, useful, you know, sound information from publicly available material and websites is really, really hard. And if you, you know, oftentimes in the research, if you try to, you know, get better info, often it's from like reaching out to program, you know, directors who have all the time in the world.
Naturally.
And sarcasm, right? or using surveys, which, you know, the response rates are often pretty, pretty terrible there. So like, it's hard. Right. So, you know, that's a good limitation to pay attention to. And, you know, oftentimes the programs, at least I will say, the programs don't always have or likely don't always have say over the copy.
They really don't.
Like, marketing probably comes in as like, we'll sell this for you, don't worry. What do you do? Video games? We got it. We know how to sell that.
We got somebody to make one of the flyers for my program, and I got it back, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is yikes. And it was a lot of that predatory copy type stuff that we read in here. I was like, there's no way this is going out, but it absolutely does happen, and some people don't have control.
Right. So, you know, good limitations to pay attention to. I would really love to see this replicated or this similar study done in the US. It's necessary because what was it only like, you know, it feels like it's maybe a decade and a half ago where it was all of the like for-profit kind of predatory institutions in the US were selling video game degrees. Come get your two-year degree, your four-year degree at these kind of for-profit institutions, not, you know, public higher ed, but these, you know, really not even private higher ed, but like, you know, University of Phoenix kinds of places, the ones that, you know, ITT Tech, places that have lost lawsuits and millions of dollar settlements levied against them for promising things they had no business promising, that had like Bupkis accreditation. Those were the only ones that had video games, to my memory, you know, video game diplomas and programs, but now they're popping up everywhere and I'm contributing to it. So there is this tension, like, you know, obviously time changes things, but I'm curious to see this replicated and see the kind of data come from the US.
And if we're both in the boat of this is personally speaking to us and the demands that are being placed on us as game faculty or adjacent faculty in higher ed, then this is going to speak to a lot of listeners. And because I'm guessing if you're listening to this podcast, there's a likelihood that you are being put in the same position. So I think this is a must read over the summer. What do you think?
It is a must read. And like you and I could talk about, you know, our personal reactions and talk about our, you know, side of things for another. Well, we do for hours on end.
Yeah, we do.
But I want to try to focus on the article itself. People come to hear us review the piece, not necessarily chatter about our own stuff. What I will say gave me real big pause before we get to the bottom line is that I'm not sure what to make of their kind of commentary on transfer. It almost seems like a critique, but there's no value judgment necessarily. Just that programs in Haas often use transfer as like an assurance. They write, quote, skill transferability is evoked to address an implicit anxiety that employment in the video game industry might not actually be feasible, end quote. They go on to later say, quote, transferable skills becomes a discursive strategy through which traditional education contexts can speak the language of employability and make a case that the skills of the humanities and social sciences, critical thinking, communication, problem solving, etc., have a value for the broader economy, end quote. It seems like they're saying, you know, there seems to be a subtext, right? Or you know, that's like, and that's wrong. Or is you know, missing the point, or is not doing enough. They don't say that. And so I could be, it could be my own insecurities here because I'm coming from a kind of Haas position and framing and thinking about at a polytechnic institution with
your whole
the
world's transferable skills.
Well, exactly. Like I am there, you know, the kind of work that I'm doing is not. And yes, it is largely interested in transfer. A lot of composition studies and rhetoric and composition is interested in transfer. Writing studies routinely says like you have to teach transfer if you want to teach effective writing. So I value transfer, and for them to kind of come in and say like they are using skill transferability as a hedge, you know.
So I didn't read it as a negative, but
you didn't. Okay.
I thought it was more just showing how that term is being used. But now when you read it in the tone you read it in, I could definitely see where you're coming from.
And again, this could just be my insecurity shining through, right? Like me feeling seen. Again, they do a very tactful job making, you know, clear observations of the data that they've seen. And so this strikes close to home in a way that I feel fragile because I'm wrestling with a lot of the insecurities of I want to build a program because I think, you know, studying the kind of interdisciplinary area of games and media is supremely valuable in ways that are important in the liberal arts, but also for career opportunities, not in industry and not in the gig economy of like games critics or, sure, or games testers, but in really, you know, practical and useful livelihood making ways. You know, so anyways, again, not about me, but I wondered at it and it struck me. And I was like, well, I do, like, skills transfer is important to me.
We do. That's a lot of what we do.
And I think if, upon thinking about it more and hearing your take, I feel a slight sense of, you know, wonder at whether that is, you know, Haas folks recognizing the issues and the dangers and saying, listen, we're not going to promise you a path because we can't, but we can say that we'll give you skills that will matter elsewhere too. And yeah, there was a sort of subtext of that maybe being an abdication of responsibility, but isn't that also,
but it can both
a lot
be true
of what the liberal arts is? Like, yeah, we're going to make you well-rounded and give you a you know, an education that'll prepare you for, you know, life. I don't know.
I think both can be true. It can be a sidestepping, sure, of responsibility, but because we don't, a lot of Haas people don't believe that it's their responsibility to do job training, right? So we say, yep, so we're not going to do that. We are sidestepping our responsibility, and instead we're going to teach these core transferable skills. And for good or evil, that is what we do. I mean, we do it all the time.
I'll have to go back into the article, and it'd be very curious to see a read. And I didn't get it from my first pass through, and maybe it's there. Like what the, you know, if they broke it down from here are like the Haas programs where they're housed, where games game dev is housed, and what they're doing versus what like STEM, where they're housed in STEM, what they're doing, and do a sort of, you know, maybe that's a little bit too, you know, siloed thinking. Maybe that's, you know,
I'd
me
be interested
kind of projecting and be like, smug, I'm better because I'm not, you know, careerist. I don't know.
Turned into the Monopoly guy for that one.
Well, yeah, you didn't see the monocle in my top hat, but I had the cigar out. Anyways. I will also say that there was good stuff I liked in here too that was not, that uplifted me. At the start, you asked how it made me feel, and I said conflicted and mixed. I have strong, you know, it resonates strongly with a lot of the concerns I have.
Yeah.
It chafed at me a little bit with observations about transfer because it made me introspect about whether transfer is enough.
Who wants to do that?
If that is a sufficient cause to, you know, sell or have sold on my behalf a program that I'm helping make. One of the things that lifted my spirits was they write that Haas-based games programs likely suffer the same issues broadly, but by teaching video game development more from the angle of the arts and storytelling could provide more inclusive pathways, mm-hmm, end quote. And that's sort of what we're kind of proposing in our program. And so that spoke to me, made me think, like, people who are doing scholarship that I like and that I respect and who are doing the work even abroad in Australia, and it sounds like a lot of what the US is going through, you know, in terms of higher ed is you know, being replicated there, they see some hope, right, in the possibility for games in higher ed. It is not, there is value to be had, and that is heartening because I think so, and I don't want to be wrong.
So. No, I think you're right. I don't think that the takeaway from this is that there's no value in higher ed games programs, but let's
got to be done right.
Check it. Yeah,
exactly. So the bottom line for me, and I'm curious to hear if you agree, they write, quote, ultimately, programs more squarely aligned with producing aspirational human capital for the video game industry are more likely to reproduce the entrenched, hegemonic, and highly gendered norms of video game production.
Woo!
Boom, that's a mic drop if I ever saw one, right?
That probably feels like it came out of left field because we haven't really touched on this.
It's all, yeah, we did, we should have.
But it's very much weaved throughout about how trying to capture the gamer, not the video game player or the video game designer, but trying to capture that quote unquote gamer label, reifies
the terrible toxicity that is perpetuated throughout the industry.
And that's one example, but there are several throughout the piece that do that same thing. They're working that higher ed. I said we are working so hard to capture these students into our programs that we're reproducing some things that are pretty terrible. And whether we go on to critique that later or not is a separate issue. But yeah, absolutely, that is weave throughout. So I think that's a great bottom line. And this is, put it on your list, everybody.
Yeah, if you are in, you know, higher ed and games or games adjacent, this should be on your reading list. You know, read it and let us know what you think. And you can do that by reaching out to us via email or replying on the Bird app. Although we might need to diversify our portfolio of social media presence.
I learned one thing 7 years ago. I am not prepared to learn
the
another.
The quality experience is quickly degrading.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. All right. Well, thank you for joining me. Stay out of the heat. I noticed you got your waffle shirt on today. I am very pleased with that. That makes me feel like
it's hot outside, but it's cold in my basement. So
That's good. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll talk to you in a couple weeks. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, all.